accepted.
I second it.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. It's a fairly short agenda. Well, first of all, let me go through a regional update here. Alex Hansen has been hired to fill our new outdoor recreation position. He's has been somewhat filling this position for the last few years, and he's been actually in that position working hard for the last few months on our outdoor recreation, which is the direction the division is going to go, to reach out to our conservation conservation organizations and try to reach out to the public and help them to understand wildlife and the wildlife issues. Let's see. So right for the September, let's see, on September the 13th, we're going to have an outdoor hunting clinic for waterfowl and upland game. And then we have our youth waterfowl hunt, which will be the weekend after. I've got those dates here. Alex, let's see, yeah, September the 20th will be our youth waterfowl hunt. And that should get underway. Kids usually enjoy that. At the clinic, we're going to have activities that include ducks and upland game ID, some decoys and blinds, shotgun shooting, some dog training, and some recipes too for cooking some of those things. Our Kokanee Day will be on the 20th. We're going to have a chukar release for the youth upland game hunts also on the 20th, so we're going to be pretty busy between that 13th and the 20th here. We have had a lot of problems with bears this year, and we continue to. I don't know what for sure if it's a sign that we have a lot of bears. Likely so, because we're having to take care of a lot of issues with bears in campgrounds, in trailers, even coming into town. And so we're dealing with those, and we'll probably take a good look at that in December, I believe, is when we do that, those RAC meetings. Our bison surveys will be starting next week. We just finished the Green River surveys due to some problems with some boat issues. We weren't able to get it. Were we able to get all of that done? We didn't get all that done the second night. Yeah.
Second night.
Threw a rod or something on the boat, so we're going to have to figure out how we're going to replace that boat to do those surveys. The Kokanee are starting to running. If you're interested in going up there and checking out Sheep Creek, head on up. Our egg take will take place on the 16th, and we're taking all comers, so if you want to come up there and help to catch Kokanee, it's a lot of fun, and we have some professional egg takers, and you can watch them at work, and it'll be a fun thing. I enjoy it when I get to go up there.
When's that, boy?
On the 16th.
Tuesday. We're meeting at 9 o'clock, man, campground.
I would, yeah. So
is that right there at the, is that redwood right by the bridge there across the road?
There last night.
I guess it'd be on the other side of Manila, so up a few miles.
That's kind of.
What campground?
Yeah. I was going to say, from where the Sheep Creek crosses the road, come this way, two stops.
Okay.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a lot of fun. Love to have anybody that wants to come up. Let's see. We finished our treatment of the middle fork of the Sheep Creek. And we're going to be treating, where are we at? Oh, Brown's Draw on September 24th, Starvation Spillway at the Stilling Station on September the 17th, and Sears Creek on September the 18th. It sounded like Stilling Station when you told me, so.
Basin.
Yes, Spilling Basin. And let's see. We completed our Mountain Goat surveys this last month. We attempted a sheep collaring capture and collaring up on the wilderness area. That did not go well. The sheep seemed to have moved off there. We had a pretty cold and snowy day the day that they were supposed to be doing that, or just before they were supposed to be doing that. We think the sheep probably moved out of there. They may come back. They've done this before. Our hunts are underway, so our officers are extremely busy right now, trying to keep up with everybody. Currently, we're working through a few road issues with the county. The next thing, next meeting, I'm going to be giving you a demonstration of a new app that we're going to be having on our, you can get on your cell phones. Everybody can put it on, and it's a direct tie into Access Division, the division. You can get your, you can pack your license on your phone now, and you can find out where to fish. You can find out all kinds of different things with this app. It's really cool, and I'll give you a demo, hopefully give you a demonstration. I wanted to do it tonight, but it wasn't quite ready. I think it's ready for the, the Google-based phones, but the iPhone, they're just barely not getting it ready, and it takes a little longer for the iPhones. But it's a really, really cool app. The people, I think our sportsmen will really like it. Yes, ma'am.
What happens if your phone is dead and your license is on your phone and the granny comes over and says they need to see your license? You're like, oh.
Well, you're depends. Dead. If it was you.
Just take your word for it.
If it was you, you'd probably breaking out the ticket book.
Right.
You'd look dishonest. And so.
That's what they told at the O.A. Park meeting.
And so. I don't know. That's something I guess we'll work through. But you'll be able to have it on the phone and whatnot. There's lots. It's a really cool app. I mean, I was excited to show it to everybody, but it's from the masses that are here. It's probably a good thing that they're not, so I can show it to them next time.
Is it going to have maps and land ownership?
Yes. Oh, I don't know that it'll have land ownership. It'll have all of the hunt boundaries. You'll be able to go and say, well, this is where my permit's for, and the hunt boundary will come up for.
Because they have that chip that you can buy that has land ownership.
Yeah, that's for a GPS unit.
Right.
But this one won't have that.
But you won't have that available.
But it'll have their hunt boundaries, and I'll be able to see what fits inside of that and stuff like that. So it's really cool. The guys have worked hard on it. Okay, the next thing, there's going to be some changes that are going to be taking place on the rack. I want to try to take care of anything all at the same time. If you're wanting to leave, or you feel like you've served your time and you want somebody else to do it, please send me a note. Within the next 4 weeks, because there's going to just be some changes. I think that's everything for the regional update. Danny, do you have any questions?
Just something to add to what I've been working with Dustin. Is it Shable?
Shively.
Shively?
Yeah.
Here, we were able to come up with about $30,000. So we may be able to do some additional flights later in this month for bighorn sheep up in the wilderness.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And they're going to be talking about that in Salt Lake. There's some things we really need to be concerned about up there.
Right.
This is a once-in-a-lifetime hunt area, and we definitely don't want to impinge on somebody's hunting opportunity that have been sitting there waiting and wanting to draw out. So we're going to talk about that, weigh it out, and see if there's anything that we can do or if we need to carry it over. So, any other questions? Okay. With that, let's move right on into number five, our fishing guidebook, and we'll turn some time over to Drew Cushing. No. Well, the wildlife board update, yeah, I can probably, if you need just a second, please, Paul. On that wildlife board update, they went pretty much with everything that our RAC recommended. With the Bobcats, the instead of going to $15, they went to $10 like we recommended. They also went, the only thing that they didn't go with was the Cougar. They felt, the board felt that, and the Cougar had a long drawn out discussion. And they felt like they went with the division's recommendation and for the 1 year, and that they had, that the division, they asked the division to come back with a new management plan, get their group together to talk about it, or they would do it for us. And so basically it was nothing of major concern, but it's something that they'll be taking a look at. So, okay, thank you, I appreciate that, Gail. Now let's go to number five, and it looks like Paul Birdsey from Salt Lake, he's our cold water fisheries program coordinator.
All right, this is my concern. Okay. As Boyd mentioned, my name is Paul Birdsey. I'm the cold water sport fish coordinator. I'd like to acknowledge my counterpart, Drew Cushing, in the back row there. He's the warm water sport fish coordinator, and then Trina Hendrick, who is the regional aquatics program manager. And together, along with the other regional aquatic staff, we tried really hard to put together these recommendations for you. With that, each year we do a survey to try and figure out what the public, how the public feels about these various recommendations or proposals. You may remember that a number of years ago we used to have two RAC meetings and we did aquatic stuff. One in the spring was an informational meeting where we presented our proposals and got some feedback from that. And then we have this same meeting again in the fall for the actual adoption of the regulations. But we got relatively little participation statewide with that informational meeting. And we were making our recommendations based on the input of 100 to 150 people statewide. And we really wanted to hear from more people. So a few years ago, we started doing these online surveys. And it's not scientific. It's just simply posted on our website that the survey is available. Anybody who wants to can go in and fill out the survey. So this year, we had it open for about a month in May and June, and that's the same time we do it each year. We received just over 1,300 responses on 13 different questions. The last question on that survey is just a free-form question. It says, tell us what you think. Do you have any suggestions? How are we doing? Whatever people want to put in that field. And 750 people took the time to fill something out in that field. 294 of those comments were related to regulation changes. The remainder were management suggestions. People wanted to see tiger trout planted in strawberry or something like that. All of those have been referred to the regional managers for their review over the next year, and they can make those changes as they see fit. So, from those comments, we tried to summarize them into a few broad categories here. The number one comment related to people wanted to see more stream access. And remember, House Bill 141 passed a few years ago, restricted access to streams that flowed across private land. People wanted to see that bill overturned. The next biggest comment dealt with people wanting to see more law enforcement in the field when they were out fishing. We had a couple of comments regarding people wanted to have no license or free license for active military members, and also a no license or free license for individuals over 70 years old. Spearfishing has been a hot topic over the last few years. And this year, about, almost 40 of the respondents indicated that they wanted less spearfishing access than has already been granted in the state, and about 20 wanted more. So it was almost 2-1 against. The one over there on the right is a growing number from over the last 3 years. People want, are becoming more interested in having bow fishing for all game species. I don't know where that's going to go in the future, but it is something I wanted to make you aware of so that we can keep an eye on it going into the future. Okay, in general, people want to see more regulation on the waters rather than less regulations. Interestingly enough, about 3 years ago when we started doing these surveys, these two bars were about the same height. It was about 50-50 between the more regulation and the less regulation groups. Last year, it got up to about 60-40 people wanting more regulation and less regulation. Now we're approaching this 70-30 range in terms of this desire. And this bears out what we see in other surveys that we've done, in that people have a desire for bigger fish. They don't necessarily want more fish, they want bigger fish. And they equate having more regulations with having bigger fish. Not necessarily true in all cases, but that appears to be the logic behind this. So, last year the legislature passed a law that said that with the approval of the Wildlife Board, we could allow wasting of fish on certain lakes with certain species. And wasting simply means that people didn't have to take them home and consume them, like was the law before. And we added a whole bunch last year, which you may remember. This year we're asking to add a few more. At Blue Lake out by Tooele, we have a illegal introduction of pacu. It's a relative of the piranha. So we're asking people to be able to dispose of those. Fish Lake, we've had a management plan group put together down there. One of their recommendations was a no limit on yellow perch, which we'll see again in a moment. And we want to be able to allow people to dispose of those. And in Gunlock, Sand Hollow, and Quail Creek reservoirs in Washington County, we have an illegal introduction of smallmouth bass. We cannot, through agreement on the Virgin River Recovery Program, we cannot manage smallmouth bass in that drainage. So we're going to recommend catch and kill regulation down there. And as part of that, we want people to be able to dispose of them rather than have to eat them. So last year, we were directed by the Wildlife Board to explore an allowance for spearfishing in all waters that have a catch and kill or a no limit regulation in place for those species. So in compliance with that, we can ask questions on the survey this year if people would support having spearfishing on 5 different waters, which would be affected by this rule change. Those were the Green River, Utah Lake, Sand Hollow, Gunlock, and Quail Creek Reservoir. So there was support for allowing spearfishing on the survey at the Green River and at Utah Lake. However, when we talked with the Green River Outfitters and Guides Association and the Forest Service about Green River, they were opposed to having spearfishing on the Green because of user conflict. And if you've been to the Green River during Saturday afternoon or whatever, you can see a lot of people fishing there. And there's a belief anyway that having spear fishermen in the middle of that would create conflicts. So in Sand Hollow, Quail Creek, and Gunlock, the responses on the survey were almost exactly 50-50 as support and opposed. And talking with the state parks manager over those parks, they're opposed to spearfishing at Sand Hollow and Quail Creek because of user conflicts. And in fact, Laura Melling, the manager there, had an idea that this was coming a year ago. She surveyed the users at the reservoirs, and the users there were opposed to having spearfishing there, at least at Sand Hollow and Crawford. They were somewhat ambivalent on Gunlock. So factoring all that stuff together, we're not recommending any change to spearfishing regulation, except for one I'll show you in a moment, at this time. What we would like to do in the future is, just like we have in the past, is be able to consider changes to spearfishing on a case-by-case basis, rather than having a blanket statement that says if there's a catch and kill or no limit, it will automatically be open to spearfishing too. So we can have the opportunity to assess biological risks as well as social conflicts for those waters. A couple quick slides about spearfishing. Drew and I went through the rules for all 50 states. Six states have explicit prohibitions on spearfishing statewide. 31 states allow spearfishing for non-game fish only. That would be carp, suckers, etc. One state allows spearfishing for non-game fish species only, but you have to have a special license to do so. And in five states, which includes Utah, allows spearfishing for selected game and non-game fish outside of the waters within the state. So in reality, Utah's already out on the edge in terms of being liberal with their access to spearfishing. There was another half a dozen states that made no mention of spearfishing in their rules, so we don't know whether that means it was implicitly allowed or implicitly prohibited by that rule. So a little history. Prior to 2008, underwater spearfishing had a two-fish limit, one fish over 22 inches and one under 22 inches. This actually put them in conflict with the rules that applied to the regular anglers. They could go, for example, Joe's Valley was open. We had a slot limit at that time on lake at Joe's Valley. But the spear fishermen could go and shoot one fish under 22 inches and one fish over 22 inches, which was not allowed by, you know, to the regular anglers. So in 2008, we applied all the limits of to spear fishermen that applied to the regular anglers. Prior to 2008, we had 12 waters open to spear fishing. 2008, we added it two additional waters. And then last year, we added another eight waters open to spear fishing. So there's currently 22 waters open. So this year we are requesting spear fishing be allowed for pacu at Blue Lake. Spear fishing is currently allowed at Blue Lake for tilapia, another illegal introduction. So we're going to add pacu to the list of the fish that they can shoot. Another Wildlife Board action item was an allowance for unlimited at-home possession. They wanted to know whether we, you know, could do that. Currently, the fish that you have at home count in your daily limit. I said that last night, and one of the RAC members went, "Oh." So, but that's the way that it is.
Really?
Yeah. So there's the rest of the story. I know the rest of the story is coming here.
That those fish in your freezer at home count in your daily limit. So we were asked to see whether we could remove that requirement. So we added that question to the survey. There was good support for the change on the survey. However, the regional managers, when we met with them, they had some reservations about the effect of this change on some of their fisheries. And what we're talking about here are fisheries that we stock with trout. So they're managed entirely with stocked fish. They're afraid that this would cause overharvest. So in trying to work all this out, we did determine that underharvest is an issue on many of our warm water and cool water fishes. So what we were recommending for this year is to allow a unlimited possession of warm and cool water fish at home. Your two-day possession in the field would still be in effect. And that's what was passed by the Wildlife Board last year. But it would not apply to your cold water trout species. So what we, how we're going to evaluate this is we did some creel surveys. We finished up a bunch of creel surveys this year. And we're scheduled to do a lot of those same waters again beginning in 2015. So what we want to do is we want to look at what the harvest was prior to this change, then the harvest after the change, to see whether harvest increases as a result of this rule change. If it does, we know that we need to be cautious. If it doesn't, then we'll be prepared to move forward with adding trout to this particular recommendation in 2016. So here's the wording. So the warm and cool water fish species, all fish that are not trout, and trout is defined in the rule book, at your permanent residence do not count as part of your possession limit. As part of this, we had to define what a permanent residence was. We worked with our legal staff, and they defined permanent residence as the domicile an individual relies upon in establishing residency for the purposes of Utah Code 23132. That basically is the one that says, can I buy a resident fishing license or do I have to buy a non-resident fishing license? So if you are a Nevada resident, you buy a non-resident license and you go spend 4 months at Panguitch Lake, for example, you do not have the ability to have unlimited possession. If you're a Utah resident and you go and spend 4 months as a camp host at a reservoir at State Park, that still does not permit you to have unlimited possession in your camp trip. We want you to take it back to wherever that place is that you plan for residency. So moving into the regional recommendations, Fish Lake, Sevier County, we mentioned that there was a management plan group put together. These are recommendations that came out of that effort. To have no limit on yellow perch, and to have a trout limit of 4 fish. Currently it's 4 fish with only 1 over 28 inches. After reviewing the data, we find that 24 inches is probably a better number there. So we want to change that to have only 1 trout over 24 inches. And hopefully what that does is it allows the creation of trophy fish like this one or more trophy fish. Lake Powell, we have a no limit on a striped bass there. And last year we allowed the disposal of striped bass. People don't have to take them home to eat them. It seems a logical next step to say, you can use those dead striped bass as bait or chum only at Lake Powell to catch other fish. Boulder Mountains, this was another work group put together by the Southern Region. Right now, the regulations in the Boulder Mountains are extremely complicated, and there's a boundary restriction there that defines what the Boulder Mountain lakes are that rivals any description for any hunt boundary in the state of Utah. And what we want to do is we want to remove that, it keeps wiggling, sorry, boundary description and say that within these lakes, unless we specifically state otherwise, they will have the statewide regulation of 4 trout. Make it easier for the anglers. So, we also have, right now, most of the lakes on the Boulder Mountain are closed to ice fishing. There's a few that are open. We want to reverse that. We want to open up nearly all the lakes on the Boulder Mountain, but keep these 10 or 11 lakes closed to ice fishing. And the reason for that is that these are relatively small bodies of water, people can severely over-harvest them because fish concentrate around spring areas or whatever during the wintertime. So we want to keep these closed. Oak Creek Reservoir is one of those reservoirs where we have stunted brook trout in there. There's just entirely too many. So in talking with the anglers, we presented them two options. We said, do you want to have an increased limit, or do you want us to chemically renovate it with roadkill? And they said, give us an opportunity to harvest out these excess fish. So their recommendation that we're carrying forward is to have a limit of 16 brook trout to improve the quality of the fishery. If this does not work, probably in 3 or 4 years, we will treat it with roadkill and start over again. Continuing to southern region, this is that smallmouth bass in those three reservoirs in the Virgin River. Currently, there's no limit on them. We want to add that they must be killed immediately after being caught. They cannot be returned to the water. These are a few lakes that we want to open up to ice fishing. These are on the Boulder Mountain or in close proximity to the Boulder Mountain. These have been closed historically for two reasons, or primarily for one reason. It's because there hasn't been access, safe access during the winter. The region, along with Jake Albrecht from the Wildlife Board, worked with DOT, with the Forest Service, et cetera, to make sure that we have safe access down there. Now we would like to open these up to ice fishing. Johnson Reservoir in Sevier County, we currently have a 1-inch by 1-inch size restriction on bait that can be used there. The reason for that was that there was a belief that small baits would not be as deeply ingested by tiger muskies, so therefore you would have less hooking mortality. A recent study completed by researchers in the Midwest shows exactly the opposite is true, that a small bait is more likely to be deeply ingested and therefore increase hooking mortality. So we want to remove that 1-inch bait restriction in Johnson Reservoir. In the same way here in the Northeast region, we'd like to remove that bait size bait restriction from Bullock and Cottonwood Reservoirs. There's still, just so you know, there still will be two reservoirs in the state, Pineview and Newton in the Northern region, that will have that restriction in place, and that's because there's a very active angler group, musky angler group in that area that we're working with, and they want to see what effect this has before they're willing to support that change in those reservoirs. Central region, Blue Lake, Tooele County, no limit on pacu. All pacu must be immediately killed, illegal introduction. This change on Bear Lake is just a clarification because on July 1st, 2014, with the new license structure, people in the state of Utah can fish with two poles and with on their fishing license. In Idaho, however, they're still required to purchase a two-pole license. People with Utah or Idaho licenses can fish anywhere on Bear Lake. What we're telling people with this is that if you're fishing in the Idaho portion, you need to check the Idaho regulation. Logan River. Logan River has a restricted limit on it, two trout or whitefish, artificial flies and lures only. That inadvertently included Tony Grove Lake, or in the second part of that, White Pine Lake, which was never intended to be included in there. Those fisheries are stocked. We want to have the four fish limit there. We thought we did. So all we're trying to do with this is just clarify that you can catch four fish at Tony Grove or White Pine Lake, but if you're fishing in the Logan River proper, you have this other one. Southeast region. have a new community fishery in the southeast region of the Night Ideal Community Fishing Pond. Drew and I actually stopped by to see it today. It's really nice. And we wanted, just as a new community fishery, impose a two fish limit that's on all of our community water. So just a little bit of information for you. We recently had a marketing firm look for ways to help improve our fishing license sales. And one of the things that we asked them to do is to find out what is important to people. People, why do they select areas to go fishing? And we have broke those people down into, the surveyed people down into two groups. One are active anglers. They have a fishing license this year. The lapsed anglers were those that had previously bought a fishing license, but hadn't bought one for the last 2 years. So we wanted to find out what was important to these people, selecting places to fish. You'll see that the number one there is that there are good-sized fish under the active anglers. And that you have to go down to number three before it says there will be lots of fish available. On the lapsed anglers, though, they said that the number one thing for them is the area will not be crowded. We don't entirely understand what the difference in perception is between crowding for lapsed anglers versus crowding for active anglers. It's number four for the active anglers. So we need to do some more investigation there to figure out exactly what that means. We don't know whether they're going only to community ponds, whether they're only going fishing on Saturday morning when there's a lot of power boaters out. We don't know what that is. But again, on this, for the lapsed anglers, it's number four for there'll be lots of fish available. So really people are keying in on this idea that they want quality over quantity. 2 years ago, we talked to the Wildlife Board and the RACs about the need to go out and look at the age and growth of fish, especially in our warm water fisheries, and try and do a little bit better job of producing quality fisheries there. These data here happen to be from Willard Bay, but they're applicable to a lot of reservoirs statewide. And what you see there is that they grow very fast for the first 4 years. They get up to about 18 inches. That's that 450 millimeter number there, or 18 to 22 inches. After that, they simply do not grow anymore. Fish have indeterminate growth. They should grow throughout their entire life. But these fish are not growing past that 4 year, 5 year number. And we believe that the reason for it is that they run out of food. And they run out of food because there's too many of them in the reservoir. So we can, like I said, we can look at this. We see this pattern in other reservoirs that we've investigated thus far. And again, it ties back to having the no possession limit for warm and cool water fish. Hopefully it will increase harvest of those species. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions from Ken, the only public member we have. Do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Questions from the rack? Mitch?
On the throwing away of the fish, you kill them and then just, are the regulations in the proclamation on how you go about that?
On how you can dispose of them?
Dispose of the fish.
There are recommendations on how people could dispose of them. During the process last year, we went back and forth. Do we put this in rule? Do we put it in a recommendation? And it became very difficult to word it in terms of a regulation as to how you had to dispose of the fish. What we have in there is the ways that you can't dispose of the fish, and their recommendations on how you can. The best way to do it is to simply come through the air bladder and sink their fish there at the lake that you're fishing.
And they don't float in the shore and line the shore? And
not if you puncture the air bladder, they sink.
So you can put it right back into the water.
Yeah, right back in the water. But You know, you start thinking about all the ways that people could dispose of the fish. You take them home, use them in your garden, feed them to your cat, you can, you know, throw them in a dumpster, whatever. And it became difficult to tell people that they had to do it one of these ways, so we just made some recommendations.
That's good. I can just picture in my mind fish floating all over the lake being thrown out.
It hasn't been a problem.
They do it right.
Yeah, it has not been a problem, and probably the biggest species that's harvested and has the ability to dispose of it and has a catch and kill regulation now statewide is carp, and we don't have reports of tens of thousands of carp washing up on the shoreline of Utah Lake.
Dan?
Yeah. So the question is about the smallmouth bass down in like Gunlock and quail breed in Sand Hollow. Those lakes currently have largemouth bass, don't they?
Right. They have largemouth and smallmouth.
So why is it okay to have largemouth but not smallmouth? I mean, you talked about. Go ahead.
Smallmouth they evolved as a stream fish, river fish. Okay. Whereas largemouth evolved as lake fish, and they don't do well in streams, whereas the smallmouth do very well in Virgin River. That's where we caught them out of when our sampling down there, and they get fat and happy on endangered fish, and so that's not a good thing.
So the largemouth could get out of those reservoirs, they just don't?
They could get out of the reservoirs, and they probably do, but they don't make a very good living downstream, and they quickly expire.
Gotcha. The other question I have is on the Paku out in Blue Lake, they're similar to like a piranha, you said?
Yeah, they are. The difference is that piranha have sharp tearing type teeth.
Oh.
The Paku has flat molars. What they eat are berries, nuts, vegetation.
All right. Thank you.
I had a question. How many lakes did you had the 16 trout limit on the Boulder?
Just one. It was just a recommendation. Okay. Oak Creek. And it was also just, called Upper Pound.
I'm sure it's because of overpopulation.
It is. There's just a bundle of brook trout in there right now. And what happens is when those fish get overpopulated, the average size gets very small. So what we're trying to do is thin them out, provide more food for those remaining, let them grow to the quality of your trophy size.
I have one more question on a starvation, and it wasn't on here, but Boyd said they was going to treat it. Are the walleye not doing really well there still?
We have no plans to treat starvation.
That would be the spill, down below the spillway. Just to remove some of those that go over.
Mm-hmm. The fish that escape, the walleye that escape out of starvation, they wind up down in the Green River. They put predation pressure onto the endangered fish in the Green River. And so we've been working really hard with the Water Conservancy District and the Bureau of Reclamation to try and figure out a way to stop those fish from going downstream. Right now, a bunch of them are accumulated in that stilling basin right below the reservoir. We're going to go in and treat just that portion to get so they don't eventually make their way downstream.
Thank you for clarifying that. I misunderstood, I guess.
No, that's fine.
Randy?
Paul, I got a couple of questions. First one's kind of two-part. Back to the survey, how did you determine who was going to be surveyed? And how many surveys did you end up sending out? It sounds like you got over 1,300 back, but.
We did not actually send any out. We just simply told people through news releases, posted on the website, whatever, saying this survey is available. If you're interested in fishing in the state of Utah, go to this link and fill out the survey.
Okay, so it sounds like the people who are really interested in it filled out the survey.
Right, and you know, it's a catch-22. The people that are really interested in fishing come to RAC meetings. We have 10. Okay? And the people who aren't interested or just think everything's both, you know, wonderful, they don't come to a RAC meeting. So how do you survey people that you know, aren't going to come out to a meeting? Well, this is the way that we've attempted to do that. And we tried open houses. We had maybe 20 people, 30 people at you know, the most attended open house statewide. But still, we were dealing with input from less than 100 people. We understand that it's that there is an inherent bias in this survey technique, but there's no other real good way, or if you have a suggestion on a good way to do it, we'd be happy to.
Not me. Okay. Second question is, it looked like, and you had a slide here that showed on the back to the spearfishing, that the survey showed substantial support for spearfishing in the green. Mm-hmm. But due to the Guides Association and the Forest Service, they thought there was going to be too much competition or too many problems with the anglers. Didn't sound like it. They didn't think there were going to be problems. Why did you choose to go with the guides and the fishing instead of the ones that actually are out there doing it?
I think a lot of that, though, is that I think we went with the idea that people may not have been fully aware of all the conflicts that could arise. The people that spend the most time on the water are those people out there every day making a living from it. And they're the ones that are making the recommendation saying that this is probably not a good way to go. And so we gave more weight to that.
The other thing was is if you look at all of those waters, that there's only four or five that you could possibly add on top of the waters that already allow it. You couldn't apply that universally. You know, you couldn't say that it was supported universally across all waters. And so to apply it on all waters seemed inappropriate.
There was some support for the spearfishing by the people that responded to the survey for spearfishing in the Green River. One of the things that I noticed during the course of doing the surveys, because we looked at the comments too, I looked at all 750 comments and tried to categorize them. There may only in fact be 200 spearfishermen approximately in the state of Utah. They are incredibly well organized. And if you get 200 people on a survey all voting yes for something, it makes a big difference. So that they may in fact have an influence disproportionate to their total numbers in the population.
Any other questions?
On your surveys, have you ever thought about just having a little sheet that you hand out when you apply for a license or
we have
anything? Does that work at all? Or?
It's one of the things that we have considered. We're still dealing with mechanically, how do we go about doing that? I mean, because we have a 365-day license, when do we start that survey? What recommendations are we trying to survey during that entire years-long license sales process? And, you know, there are some logistical questions there. One of the things that we're trying, that we actually tried to work this year, but ran into technical difficulties, which I think eventually is going to really help here, is that to have an online type of open house that people don't actually have to get up out of their houses and drive to Vernal or to Price or to wherever we're holding these open house meetings, and they can interact with the biologists and make their recommendations at that time. And one of the things I neglected to mention, which I certainly should have, is that we do the survey, but that is only one method that we receive input from the public. Trina gets calls and emails and letters and everything else every day that she comes into work about fishing. We take all that information. If we're out doing a grill survey like it's been done at Starvation Reservoir this year, we take information from those people that we're talking to. We do open houses. We do everything. So we are contacting as many people as we possibly can to get input from those people. We monitor the forums online to see what kind of a hot topic so we can address it.
And then I have one other question on at-home possession limit. Is that actually ever enforced other than under very special circumstances?
It has been enforced. I've worked for the division, we're talking about this today. I've worked for the division full-time for just under 29 years. I've actually worked for them, including my seasonal time, almost 35 years. And in that 35-year period, I know of three cases that have been made where we actually obtained a search warrant, went into someone's house, and busted them for an egregious over-limit of fish.
So is it worth to even have that on the trap, that home-protection limit?
Well, it's a question that you folks need to resolve. On the other side of that, what you need to remember is that what we're talking about there with trout fishing fisheries are the fisheries that we support by backing a stocking truck up to and dumping fish into. And what you really need to see, rather than a bunch of water and fish going into the water out of the back of that stocking truck, you need to see that as dollar bills. So if in fact having an unlimited possession does create an over-harvest situation, and we're protected, we either need to have a reduced limit, then we'll go from a four-fish statewide limit to a two-fish statewide limit, or we have to produce more fish, or the fishing goes to pot halfway through the summer, and therefore people don't buy fishing licenses the following year because they had a bad experience. All of those things cost us money. So that's the concern there, is what does that do to our bottom line?
So the question is, you've had three or four egregious cases in 30-some years.
Again,
do you anticipate that that would just go skyrocket, or are you going to have three or four people that are going to do that anyway?
I anticipate that I don't know the answer to that question. Okay? That's why, and when we don't know, we'd like to be cautious. That's why we're where we're at.
Just kind of a follow-up question, Paul. So currently, the at-home limit, is that two possession, two-day possession limits? Is that,
yes.
That is? Okay.
So you adding your fish up, Dan?
he's gonna start eating tonight.
Come on, my way so quick.
Okay. Oh, here goes Randy out the door.
Randy's over there.
Make it five.
All right, let's move on to some comments. A comment. Ken, why don't you give us your piece? Thank you, Paul.
Ken Strong, I'm here representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. As Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife would like to say that we support basically everything that has been said tonight by Paul, with the exception of the trout being left off the limit. Let me catch myself here. We look at a lot of the lakes. Some of the lakes that have been in question has been Panguitch and Otter Creek. The fear at first was that people would come in from out of state, set up camp for the summer on those reservoirs, harvest the fish, bottle them, do whatever, with this no possession limit once they hit your primary domicile. But as Paul mentioned, that's against the law now because they, according to the rules, they have to be a resident of Utah. They'd have to buy a non-resident license, and therefore they would not qualify for this. One of the other things that come up was the 16 fish limit on Oak Creek and the Boulders. What the division is asking to do is to help them out in disposing of the brook trout, which is great. And if you camp up there, you have the opportunity to bring home two possession limits, so you could bring home 32 fish. The drawback to it is once you come home, you cannot go fishing again until you consume those fish. So in a way, you're helping them out, and in another way, you're getting penalized for helping them out. Another concern on this is if you go to Strawberry, or if you go to Flaming Gorge and you catch your limit of fish, and you come home, you can't go fishing again until you consume those fish. That's four fish. That's a four fish limit on those two reservoirs. So with this rule of putting the trout in, that would open the door for you to be able to go up there and catch your four fish and come home, and when your buddy calls you and says, let's run up to Steinecker, the fish are biting good, you can run up there without having to worry about these. In the survey, the question was asked if you wanted the limit removed once they hit your house. And there was a majority of the people that wanted it removed, not a big majority, but there was a majority. I can understand the situation with the regional managers. I have talked with Paul and Drew about this and have agreed that in 2 years, if it falls apart, we step in and fix it. But we don't think it's going to fall apart, because right now, most of the people don't even know that it's illegal to come home and put fish in your freezer. And they don't know it's against the law to come home and bottle fish. But it is. And so if you put, and so most of the people that are going to do this are already doing it. If we take the trout off the limit once they hit your primary domicile, then you can bottle fish if you want to have fish for the winter or whatever. If you like bottled fish, bottled fish tastes a lot like salmon, canned salmon. It gives you a little bit more of a variety, and it's just something that we feel as Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife that the public would like. In our group, people we have surveyed and asked want this, and so therefore, that's the proposal that we have for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, I guess we'll turn it over to discussion with the RAC.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
You kind of made a strong point that when you brought them home, you'd have to eat them. A little bit of trouble. Surely you've got relatives, or if you want to go fishing again, you can take it to your kids, your meal. You don't necessarily have to eat them.
No.
But you could, I mean, if you like to fish, you know what, you could make alternative plans. You've got cousins.
You could give them to cousins or neighbors, I guess. And I really don't understand that part of the law. So whether you have to do like a big game where you have to fill out a paper.
You do.
You have to fill out a paper to put them over there. But then in that case, wouldn't they still count on your license?
They
would. Not if you bequeath them to
They're not in your home.
Again, allowing trout would do away with this problem. There wouldn't be a question.
I've never fished.
Yeah, still not straight. Could you do that and still not?
You can donate them by filling out a donation slip and give them to whoever, and then it would be off of yours, and it would belong to them.
And then you could go back and go fishing. Yeah. So it does kill the argument that's got to eat them. That was my point.
Yes, right.
At that point, though, if they had a license and they had a couple of trout in their freezer, would they be in trouble?
They could be.
Could be. They couldn't break the limit.
Yeah. Right, so if you gave them yours,
it's just
we're talking limit.
We're trying to get people.
You're talking two bag limit, no matter who's got it.
No matter who your neighbors are on the block, if they're good fishing.
They really do.
Want but the question still is it's not being enforced anyway.
Absolutely.
You know, three times in how many years? It's just not being enforced. No one's going over to my little neighbor next door who goes fishing, you know, a couple times a month, brings home their fish and balls it. Not telling you where I live. You know, and during the winter they eat it. There's no enforcement. Why is it there?
Yeah. And
until we had the last meeting, I had no idea you couldn't throw them in your freezer or bottle them. Because it's not just being enforced. You know, otherwise they'd be knocking on every door down my street going, let's check your freezer.
Just a minute. Randy, would you
In those egregious situations, sometimes... most of the time when that's enforced is when we get information from people that they're going and catching more than one limit in a day, and then we get a search warrant for their house, and that's when we're finding hundreds of fish. if we don't actually see the individuals catching the over limit, sometimes that's the only way we can address that situation is by enforcing the drastic over limits at their house. You understand what?
Well, it gives these guys a tool if they've got a perpetrator that's really vulnerable.
But yeah, how many times does that actually happen this year?
I couldn't tell you.
Well, in terms of having over limits per day or whatever, that happens all the time.
Yeah, but usually you're catching them while they're at the lake and they have a cooler full of fish. You're not following them home and checking their cooler at the house.
We don't follow them home and check their coolers at their house, but if we have information from somebody stating they're catching a bunch of over limits, if we don't see them and that individual doesn't want to testify in court, then the only tool we have is addressing it at the house.
Yeah, but that's going to be like 1.5, you know, 0.1% of the general population. Most people go get their limit, go home, bottle it, you know, throw it in the freezer or whatever, then go out and fish again and have, you know, two or three. I'm talking about my little neighbor who cans it, and during the winter, you know, she may have 7 or 8 cans of, you know, bottles of fish there. And that's going to be, you know, over 90% of the population does that.
It isn't a lot.
So why do we have the exclusion for the trout where it really isn't making that much of a difference?
It is, like you said, it is a tool.
You know, I've gone out and seen people, you know, just slaughter and, you know, have strings of fish. But then again, we don't have the law enforcement. You need about 19 more of you out there every day that can enforce this rule.
And that's why it's important to have those tools sometimes. And I'm not arguing one way or the other, but sometimes when there is egregious problems where there's hundreds and hundreds of fish being taken by a single individual, the only thing that we can actually cite them with or charge them with is the actual possession at their house. And it doesn't happen a lot, but, you know, there isn't very many of us. You know, sometimes people don't report stuff that they see or whatever, but it has been important in some instances to address, you know, problems that.
But there's no other way that you can go in and address that kind of thing other than with that regulation?
Not really. Not that I can think of right now. I mean, it happens with a lot of cases where we don't see it. People don't want to testify in court to what they see. We have to address it the best we can later. And sometimes possession is the only way we have to address it. And that's with deer, elk, lots of different.
You know, I could see if it was happening more, if there was a real problem on a lake where they were just going in and, you know, raping the lake. But, it's not a big enough problem, you know, to really regulate just trout that way.
True.
And I know it's money coming out because you're raising those to put in there.
Randy, could be one of the lines.
Drew, do you have some place to shed?
Just a couple things to kind of clarify. You know, the reason that it was supported by the public. The reason we'd like to move forward on the warm water side of things and cool water is they reproduce naturally. And so they're not reliant upon, you know, our hatcheries to, you know, sustain those populations. They're there. And as that graph showed, we actually have an underharvest, including lakes in this region, on warm and cool water fish. We have a creel survey that we just completed on Starvation and Reservoir where we can take a look at people's behavior, because what we're talking about, and it's exactly what you said, you know, people, if they're doing it now, will this change what they do after this goes into effect? It may and it may not. And what we'd like to do is actually have a chance to look at a lake like Starvation, where we have trout and both warm and cool water fish in there, and just say, how many fish did each angler harvest before this went into effect? How many did they harvest afterwards? What we're asking is just 2 years to explore that. And if it's safe, then dive in. If it's not, then we should be cautious. And the warm and cool water fish, we feel that this could benefit us. The cold water side of things, we're not sure yet.
I like when Randy's talking. I look at it, it's not so much the letter of the law, but it's the intent of the law. And these guys aren't out to get the neighbors and the little old ladies. You know, necessarily, it's to catch the guys that are really abusing it. Now, that's how I look at it.
It may not make a difference, but that 2 years, what they're recommending, you know, maybe, you know, that 2 years will be able to determine how much of an effect it is having.
Well,
I would really suspect that Randy would be very careful going into very many homes and checking very many freezers.
Well, he's going to have a piece of paper with him, too. He can't just walk in and check it.
That's pretty difficult to get. You have to have some pretty good evidence to get that, don't you, Randy?
Yeah.
So if you leave it in place, you got that tool, but you're probably not going to change people's behavior really one way or another.
I don't know. None of us know. That's what they're saying with the 2 years. It's just hard to say what. There's an article in Outdoor Life. There's a very small percentage of people that do egregious wildlife violations, but they do have a pretty big impact when they do. So even if there's just a few people being caught, what's that doing to those people? If we do this, is that going to encourage those people to do it more or less? This is kind of what you're trying to figure out with waiting the 2 years. I think it's not 100% either way.
I just hate to see a rule that you're putting in place that you're not going to enforce anyway. Why have the rule?
It has helped, though. We had a water community fisheries in the southeast region. We had a couple of people that would go there and fish every day, catch their limit. Now, I talked with them on multiple occasions, told them, you need to be eating your fish every day. This is not Walmart. This is not your local grocery store. You need to eat those fish every day. If you are, please come back tomorrow. We have the law enforcement officers down there stop by and visit those people, tell them the same thing. And it basically got to the point where they were telling us they were taking them home and putting them in the freezer, and they planned on having them all winter long. And we told you, don't come back here tomorrow. You've just admitted to a violation. Don't come back here tomorrow. The only way that we could drive that point home was we finally got a search warrant. We went into their house. They didn't have 40 or 50 fish in their freezer. They had hundreds of fish in their freezer. Now we're talking on a 1 acre community pond. Those people cost the fishing license buyers of the state of Utah thousands of dollars as a result of their behavior. Now, sure, it's only one case. But it was one case that without that tool, that there was no way that we could protect that particular fishery. And so that's what we're concerned about.
And that story, that's a good, there's not no enforcement. I've told thousands of people that you can only.
Yeah, but you're telling them at the lake.
Yeah. But
you're catching them at the lake. You're not going to their house saying, hey, we got an informant saying, hey, you got 900 fish in your freezer.
There's just because we're not going into people's house doesn't mean there's not enforcement. We tell people the regulations a lot, and that's a level of enforcement. Issuing warnings is a level of enforcement, and that's being done a lot more than just, a few times. So that, should be lots of stuff with wildlife, laws. Enforcement involves a lot less than knocking on somebody's door with a piece of paper. So, don't look at it as it's not being enforced just because we're not doing that, going that far with the enforcement. There's a lot of different levels.
Okay. Dan?
Yeah. So the story that Paul just shared, I think that's a good example. The thing is it just takes a few people to do something like that. And the effect is much greater on a bigger group of people, especially on a small fishery like that. You've got, four or five people doing that, and it really is taking away a resource from other people. So I'm supportive of keeping that.
One of the most annoying things about that, Dan, was those people were probably directly responsible for depopulating that lake. And they would call me up to tell me that they were no longer catching fish.
Exactly.
That's
my point. Yeah.
That pond. So.
And it affects a bigger group of people. So there's only so many fish to go around. So.
Kids.
That's not why I don't catch fish.
Go ahead. One more.
As and everybody, when Paul was giving this part of the presentation, I was looking up and down, and you could tell that there were a number of people that were like, really. You know, that's strange, you know, and there are a lot of people that are unaware of this. And it is complicated, you know. We have a no limit on walleye at Lake Powell. And if a person goes down and, let's say, takes 50 walleye, which is what we want them to do, comes home and lives somewhere around Willard Bay, you know, legally he can't go to Willard Bay and harvest any more walleye. Even though at Willard Bay, that's probably a benefit to us too. And so what we're really asking is you know, we feel comfortable with that. And using that, we can evaluate the rest of it as we move forward the next couple of years. And that's all we're asking.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Any motion?
I'll make a motion that we support the division's plan, with the exception that Ken has proposed, because I too feel that that's an issue that is minimal. That the trout be on the unlimited side also.
Any further discussion? Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded. Get that? Okay. All in favor? 5-4. Those against? 3. Dave? Mitch? Okay. Okay. With that wraps up our action items for the meeting. We'll adjourn. And I want to thank you all again for coming. I appreciate your input and your efforts for our area in helping us manage wildlife.
We appreciate you being chairman.
Yeah.
You do a great job.
There we go. Thank you.